woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new... So, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun.
Well, North Bay, Section X. That's how many of you remember over on the board. SP Futures down 15. NASDAQ Futures down 74. Dow Futures down 137. This is after kind of a second day of carnage yesterday. Well, yesterday the carnage was mostly in the Dow and not in the NASDAQ. NASDAQ was only down 12, unlike Monday, where the NASDAQ was down a bunch. NASDAQ actually came back and was up near the close and then ducked a little bit. The Dow was down 473, so the big carnage was there yesterday. Kevin, how are you? Where was your carnage yesterday?
No carnage at my house. I am the same blob of humanity that I always was.
The same blob of protoplasm?
Yes.
There's a name I haven't used in a while, a word.
That would make, what would that be, like a good softball team name?
Yeah.
Blobs of protoplasm?
No, Maddie's team had a big win last night. They won 3-1. It wasn't a walk-off, top of the seventh, but they did well. Of course, we can't hear
3-1,
him.
3-1, eh? No bats, huh? No bats out last night.
Plus, he didn't turn himself on. But
I'm on now. You know you're in a good softball game when it's a 3-1 final. I mean, talk about... And the one run that the opposing team scored was on the very first batter. We had a three-error play that turned a single into, turned a ground out into a home run.
We used to call those home runs.
Yes, and then we had no errors the rest of the game, made every play, and we're down 1-0 into the seventh. And then with two outs, we hit a three-run home run to go up 3-1 and beat them 3-1.
And then held on. Pretty sweet. Those are good wins.
It was a great win. It was two teams that were 4-0, and now we're 5-0.
Wow, that is. You guys are cool. I mean, it's you're like the. What team are you guys like? Not like the Cubs, but the Cubs are sort of doing that lately, sort of.
Well, I put this team together, and it's a team of guys that are really good athletes. That everyone played high level, either high school or college sports, baseball, basketball, a couple football guys, but only a couple of guys have actually really played 16-inch softball over a period of time. And so we played in the fall, and you know, we were solid because we were athletic and could play. But this year, after about three or four games, we really started to click. And now we turned a bunch of good athletes into actually some pretty decent 16-inch softball players. And I think we're going to be a scary team here going into the future.
Well, how are you guys?
I'm going to have to get over and watch you this summer then.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, this league I wouldn't say is the strongest league. But the team we played last night was as good as any team I've ever played against. And it was a battle. I mean, it was an absolute battle, and both teams very clearly didn't like each other by the end of the game. And it was
all right. So next, I want to go next time you two play then, because I want to go to the grudge match.
Absolutely, and I almost don't like the fact that we won the regular season game, because I know we're going to see these guys in the championship game. But it was an awesome game. And it was, we gave them a free run for the first batter, and then it was 1-0 into the seventh. And then we put a three spot with two outs, a three-run homer to go up 3-1, and held on to beat them. So they're going to have a chip on their shoulder in the playoffs, I can tell you that.
I would say
good.
So.
That's a good thing. Then when you send them home defeated once more, it'll be all that much sweeter and all that more all the more devastating for them.
Yes, that's right.
You know, you're going to be like Drago, you know, what is it, I must crush you or something like that in the Rocky movies.
What? The
it's not just beating you, you got to crush your spirit, too.
Oh, yeah, you got to make sure that
he dies.
Yeah, it's just a bad day for him. What's the difference? So, Kevin, are you ready for the big CPI report today that we've been talking about for like 4 years? Were we a bit early or what?
They've been saying this morning that they're looking at something like year over year, 3.6%.
Yeah.
Watch it come out at 4 plus.
Well, I honestly think they need a reboot because they've been lying so long that I don't think the numbers are even any good. And I think they need a reboot, but they're not going to do that. It's really they backed themselves kind of into a corner, and when we were young, I suspect the same thing happened to you as me. When you tried to tell a whopper as a kid, my mom let it go for like a day or two, and finally she hit me with the how many lies you had to tell to cover the first one. You know, and it's
well. And here's the thing: the way this is, you're hinting at the way politicians tell lies anyway, is they will typically tell you what they think they can get away with telling you, not the truth. And when caught, then they will tell you a little bit more of a lie because they think, okay, maybe this will satisfy them. And that's the way it goes. That may have been the one refreshing thing about Trump is at least he just went all in right off the bat.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, with the big whopper, he didn't screw around with all those interim steps.
Yeah, he either would say something amazingly truthful that nobody else would say, or else everything was a big whopper. It was like no middle ground to the dude. Because some of the stuff
we're going to get as much inflation reported as they think they can get away with telling us happened. So, and no more. So, you know, we'll temper it as much as we can, but, you know, we're not at the point anymore where we can just say there's none.
Well, it comes down to, you can't, you know, if you tell somebody, what is it, no man can do just one thing. If you tell your wife or kids, don't worry about the gas gauge, there's plenty of gas. And there isn't. And all of a sudden somebody's 50 miles from home and they're on the side of the road, you're probably the numb nuts that's got to go pick them up, explain to them how you lied about the gas gauge and how everybody's terrified on the side of that. I mean, you don't end up ahead on the deal. I don't think you do anyway. I mean,
it's never a winning proposition,
no.
But that doesn't change the way people behave because, you know, that's just how liars do it.
But in this, when you, it's not like if you lie about the CPI, that it doesn't affect anybody. It affects, well, I mean, I didn't even used to talk about this a year ago, but it affects any escalation clause that might be out there. So you're clearly picking sides. You're saying that you're on the side of the purchaser and not the side of the seller, right? Well, no, the other way around. You're on the side of the seller, not the side of the purchaser. I'm sorry. It is the other way around. The purchaser gets away with not having to pay higher, and the seller doesn't get anywhere near the inflation relief he's supposed to be getting over the life of the contract. Correct. I mean, if you had a escalation clause, for instance, in this, what is it, maybe the 12-year burn interchange project? Can you imagine if you don't have an escalation clause in that? The way steel prices are running up. And I don't know about concrete. I assume it's going up, but all the wood clearly has tripled in the last year. If you don't have an escalation clause, you're basically bleep out of luck. But guess, whoa, now wait a minute. What if you do have an escalation clause, and the consumer price index tells you there's no inflation when there is? What have you gained now? I mean, you can't just say you're lying about the CPI. Now the poor guy who's putting this. The steel rebar in over there, is he even going to be in business? I mean, how can he afford the price?
Well, how many government benefits require cost of living adjustments.
Well, not only, but I think there's also there's government, but I think there's still pension funds. I mean, obviously, your teachers and people like that, the unions that still manage to have those kinds of deals with the public unions. There probably, I'll bet there's still a few other unions that have it, Kevin. I'll bet there's a, if you're iron workers or something, I'll bet there's some kind of an escalation clause in there from way back in the day. It's probably toned down, but I'm guessing they're not gone. I mean, I don't know. If somebody, one of the listeners knows, please tweet us in or whatever, or call in. But I can't believe that they're, that a 5-year steel workers contract is silent on the issue. I mean, do you think they are? I don't know. You probably are closer to me now. That there's none in there at all?
You know, and I don't know either, Tom. My point about bringing up government-related benefits is, the deficit is already bad enough. If you acknowledge inflation, then you acknowledge, you may be repricing debt as a result of that and repricing some of the benefits you pay out. So you just make the deficit worse. So the deficit spending that we've done is we are now in a death spiral on it.
Well, sure you are. Absolutely. I mean, it is a lot like, learning how to swim and not getting wet. You really want, as a government, you want tremendous inflation so you can buy your debt back sometime 20 years from now for dollars that are worth way less than the ones you borrowed, correct? I mean, that's the deal. That's what people have been doing for centuries. It's the Romans did, for God's sake. But you also, in our day and age, when you have entitlement plans that are based on the CPI, you can't tell anybody that. So you got to go through a period of 20 years where your CPI is 1%. At the end of 20 years, have your CPI actually like tripled or something, right? And you got to try and pull that off. Well, they've done it pretty well until now, right? It appears to be. I mean, clearly. What do you think your CPI would look like if you and I decided to go back? It would take us 20 minutes, not even that, to go back and say, okay, since 1990, we want to regroup the healthcare piece, not only in how much it actually has gone up, but in the percentage it's gone up in regards to the basket. So instead of 3% going up per year, or 2.5% for 6% of the basket, it's really 19% of the basket. And oh, by the way, it's up 7%. What do you think that does to the last 20-year number? Triple it? Quadruple it? Same thing
with
education.
And the problem is that we've reported the baskets nominally over the years. We have the ability to very easily now, with database technology and big data, et cetera, we have the ability to go back and retro-adjust the basket so that you can really get a view of what's changed. Because isn't that what you should do? You should say, okay, if we're going to compare, then we have to do apples to apples. So let's go rework what the baskets look like. And you don't have to change what you report. You just have to say this is Schedule B. If the basket looked the same now as it back then as it did now, then here's what it would look like.
Well, I think some of it's somewhat difficult, Kevin. It's not easy. The part where they're cheating, in my opinion, the part where they're cheating is easy in the sense that, okay, we've downplayed this medical thing now for what, 4 decades? I mean, that's an obvious one. Stuff like, and I mentioned this before, stuff like having two prices on the toll road, for instance. One for the guys with the easy pass and one for the guys who try and pay cash. You can't even pay cash now, I don't think. But if you did, it was, what, twice as much? Well, which price do you use? I mean, is the cash price, you forget about that one because that's a stupido tax for people who don't have the easy pass? Or, I mean, what is it? I mean, we have this dual pricing. We have stuff that came out of nowhere. I mean, we don't count, I don't think you count anywhere in that mess, your changes the title of your car and your stickers and stuff. I mean, maybe you do. Maybe it's in there someplace. There's probably somewhere in the driving a car. But I don't see how you do that on the federal level because the states are so different. But now we're up to What did I calculate? Well, $10 an hour, which people are making more than that now. It was your first 65, 68 hours was in the taxes and in the transfer fees for in your city sticker and the parking thing in front of your house to buy some old junk. I mean, that's a lot. I mean, if you were to take any sort of a redo of not just the CPI, but we don't suppose if you didn't have to, I'm going to say, 30 years ago, you didn't need a sticker to park in front of your house. Now you do. You know, and it's, you know, a couple hundred, what is that? I don't know, not a couple hundred a year, but it's something. You know, by the way, if you get caught with a ticket once, then you're back, and you're up to a couple hundred. I mean, is that even in there? I mean, something new that comes out of the blue, you know, what if there's a toll on a bridge that was never there before? Is it even in the thing? Probably not. You know, so I mean, it's not easy to do because
you need a line item that says, you know, that basically is called stuff that didn't exist before that exists now.
Well, yeah, I mean,
it's your cost of living.
As I asked Jeff the other day, I said he didn't. There's no parking stickers in front of your house in Evanston. He lives in Evanston, I believe. I said, what if all of a sudden Evanston, because they charge you for everything else, I mean, a place is absolutely useless. I mean, if you have one extra bag of garbage, you got to buy like a ticket for $2 or some crap. Okay. So I said, Jeff, so what if all of a sudden they charge you $500 to park in front of your house? He's like, well, I don't know where that would go. I said, well, it wouldn't go anywhere because it's not in there. And all of a sudden for the next 10 years, if it stays at $500, well, everything else is going up. It actually would detract because after the first year where you don't count it, then it doesn't go up at all, right? So it never actually,
that's a zero item.
That's a zero item.
That's going to pull your weighted average down.
So, but you have, I mean, this gasoline is up. I mean, I think, you know, Maddie, where was I? I'm losing track of time, but I'm going to say 10 weeks ago. When I get gas every Sunday morning, I'm going to say it was $2.10, $2.20, and now it's $3.25. Well, that's a jump. I mean,
you know what's interesting about gasoline? That is the one thing that does come down sometimes.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Almost anything else, the price goes up, it stays up. It never comes back down. You just hope it flattens. In the case of gasoline, that's not what happens. It actually will come down every now and again.
Well, there's just
and stay down for a while.
The part about the what Dan was telling me, my brother Dan, president of PTI, was saying that he still has some clients that are from back in the day when we used to do lectures on corn and soybeans and stuff. He has guys that say, I don't think I've ever heard where the spot price of corn is higher than the Board of Trade price, Kevin. Corn has gone from, I'm off by a few cents here, I'm going to say last August it was $3.30 a bushel, now it's like $7.50. But there hasn't been a drought that I or a flood that I've noticed. Have you? I've seen that happen
so
before.
What else though has changed? Cost of transportation.
Well, but not to that extent. I mean, your barge is not. I mean, is that costing you $4?
What makes you think that supply chain is any less disrupted than any of the others?
What I'm saying, there's no way that you're dropping your bushel at Marseille in the Illinois River, and all of a sudden it's $4 a bushel to take it to New Orleans. I mean, that's not happening. Not yet. It's up some, yeah, but it... Well, you know, I'm saying what you're saying actually would make it the other way around. You'd say that your spot price would be even lower because it would cost you to move it someplace. I'm saying the spot price is higher than the move price, which is really nuts. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen that before. So, I mean, there's a lot of crazy stuff. I mean, I think somewhere you have the answer in what you're talking about, but it's such a massive. I mean, that's the thing that always is when you dig into the economy at all, Kevin. I mean, you know this because you're doing the lecturing on the supply chain. So there are so many variables, there are so many items that you don't even think of that when you start sensing some problems. I mean, I got somewhat of a lesson to that due to we had for lunch at. We had for lunch. We didn't have him for lunch. We had lunch with him in Akron. We took a really neat bike trail on this old canal, and when we had lunch, this guy met us. I think he might have been a college player of some kind, a big, huge black dude. But he was in the business of supplying dollar stores. You know, I said, how in the hell do you do that? I mean, I was all ears because I'd always fascinated about how the hell do you make any money selling somebody, you know, thing of soap or something for a buck? And he goes, oh, no, I get the, what the hell, like, he got the cap from Canada, and the cap was 2 cents, and the bottle was 3 cents, and he got that from Mexico, and the label was a half a cent, and the soap that went in it was like 8 cents, so his cost was, say, 16, and he sold it to the dollar guy at 50, and that guy sold it at a buck or something along those lines, and everybody got piggy move up along the way. But just the idea that there were like four or five different supply, it never dawned on me that the label, the bottle, and the cap would all come from three different directions, and not to mention the stuff inside. So you got four people for a 2 ounce thing of soap. I mean, you know, I guess if I'd have thought through it, I would have understood that. But I'm saying our economy is so bizarre. It's almost like the human body. You can't even go about all the things that are going around just to get somebody to be able to walk down the street, right? I mean, there's
and that complexity is, you know. So we, you know, when we keep talking about why things are disrupted and why it's so hard to put them back together, is that's a good example of the complexity involved in doing it. One gets a little out of whack, it throws everything else a little out of whack, and you know, they all have to recover and slowly but surely find their way back into some kind of equilibrium where everything's running smoothly again. And we're a long way from that. Just take an example of the pipeline breach. They're going to be down for a week, and they're saying it's probably going to be 3 more weeks for them to recover after being, you know, it's not like, okay, we turned on the spigot, we're only a week behind. We're going to be 3 weeks or a month behind.
What does it take?
By the time everything gets back the way it was, plus the disruption there is now all of a sudden we're trucking things all over the place. So now they're saying, okay, where can I source this? Well, the pipeline ran from Houston to the port up at New York and New Jersey. Maybe we're not trucking everything from Houston. Maybe we can truck some stuff in from Ohio or from the Midwest or, you know, whatever. So now we're all competing for a scarcer commodity. And how's that all going to go back to normal with the snap of a finger? And the answer is it's not.
How long, I read this once, a long time ago, so I do not remember. How long does it take a barrel of oil to get from Houston to New York Harbor? How fast is it going?
Well, it depends on how you define a barrel of oil. If the way the pipeline works is you push in a barrel on one end and a barrel comes out the other.
No, it's a full pipeline. I mean,
answer is it's almost instantaneous, effectively. But if you're talking about total travel time, I don't know how long that takes.
I
don't know enough about pipelines to tell you. When they shut it down, what did that mean to the contents of the current contents of the pipeline? I'm assuming that it didn't get drained out somehow. So,
well, if it's gasoline, it should be all right. If you're trying to ship number five oil, you got a problem. But hopefully, they're not doing that.
They have four lines. So yeah. Let me see. One of them was gasoline. One of them was jet fuel. One of them was home heating oil, and I'm trying to remember what the fourth one was.
It's probably
natural gas.
Yeah, well, that's a big deal. SP futures up down 15. I'm going to say 4 days, and I'll look it up on break. SP futures down 15. NASDAQ futures down 77. That would be what, 10 miles an hour? I don't see how you go much faster than that. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, everyone. Face Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Ollie. Just met over on the board. S&P futures. We have my page up here. By the way, how long does it take, Maddie, to go one end to the other? 2 weeks. I was wrong on 4 days.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It's 5,500 miles. That's kind of a ways. Yeah, so what is that? It's did it by hour. It's not going too fast, but it's moving. It's doing something. S&P futures down 14. NASDAQ futures down 79. Dow futures down 131. Individual stocks, Boeing down $1.63. Boeing was down pretty much yesterday. Goldman Sachs down 92 cents. Home Depot got a big hit yesterday as well. JP Morgan down $1. Microsoft down $1.37. The stocks that have really gotten hit are the ones that everybody loves. I mean, I get the big holders. I mean, because we have a lot of people in a lot of the places that I do some stuff for. And I have, I mean, Apple's down from 147 to 125. It's a big move in Apple. I mean, especially a stock that people think is, you know, it is the world these days. Whether it is or it isn't, I don't know, but people think that. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX actually bouncing here in Europe a little bit. DAX up 45.3% because we bounced during the day yesterday. I mean, we were down 2-something, and NASDAQ only finished down maybe like 30 points. So FTSE up 30 points, 0.4%. CAC around down 3, call that flat. We're in Asia. Nikkei down again, however, 461. It's 1.6%. They were down like 900 yesterday. So Shanghai up 20. Shanghai's been up during this whole thing. That's 0.6%. Hang Seng up 217. And those guys were down heavy yesterday, so they're bouncing back some. The Taiwan dropped another 4%. Nissan shares down 10%. So there's some abuse going over there to some of these stocks. Not necessarily in the mainland China market, but other places. Bonds unchanged at 1.61. That's the 10-year rate. Bund minus 0.17. Japan positive 0.08. UK is positive 0.81. Oil up 81, 66.09. Brent up 78 cents, 69.33. Natural gas down 2 cents, 2.93. RBOB unchanged at 2.14. You notice the spread between RBOB and the gas you pay has gone up. So the distribution, there's been times when the RBOB, Manny, what did we say, 75, 80 cents, and now it's got to be $1.30 at least, and that's a big So somebody's making money on the distribution of gas right now they don't normally do. Gold down a buck at 18.35. Silver down 14 cents, 27.52. We don't set a big run. Copper up 2 cents, 4.78. Last but not least, our Bitcoin down 330, 56,376. Maybe we got more traffic, weather, sports. Is this getting longer by the day now that we're putting Bitcoin and everything else in there? Seems like it.
It is, but it's all important news. 38 yep. minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have a crash on the Bishop Ford on the outbound side just before 137th Street that's blocking the right lane. This is causing stop-and-go traffic on the outbound Ford, I-94, on the south side, so keep that in mind. And then just south of there, it looks like we have some exit and entrance ramps closed on the Bishop Ford on the outbound side at Sibley. This is due to road construction, so a couple of issues on the outbound side of the Bishop Ford, so keep that in mind on the south side. No issues on the inbound side. Dan Ryan is still looking good, same for I-57. Stevenson and Eisenhower, heavy traffic volumes already this morning, which is not a good start to the day, but no accidents to report, just high traffic volumes, at least on the Stevenson. On the Eisenhower, there was an earlier accident on the inbound side just before Des Plaines Avenue. That apparently is clear, but that's certainly affecting I-290 on the inbound side as far as traffic delays are concerned. No issues on the north side. Edens and Kennedy looking good. Lakeshore Drive is quiet in both directions. And it looks like we only have one other crash in the area. That's in the northwestern suburbs. Route 22 at Howe Street, which is Illinois Route 59, is the only crash, and that's up northwest. Everything else is quiet out there. Weather today, we have sunshine in the area this morning. A bit warmer than yesterday, but still well below normal. We'll be sunny with a high of 53. We're going to be in the 60s this weekend, so that'll feel nice, but no sign of the 70s anywhere near the near future. And our normal high this time of year is around 68 or 69, and we've been lucky to touch, you know, 50, let alone 60. But today, a high of 55 with sunshine. Right now, it is clear and 44 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine as well down in the Valley of the Sun. And a high of 99. Right now it's clear and 65. In sports, the White Sox keep rolling. They look like they might be the best team in baseball, Chief, or certainly one of them. They blew out the Twins last night, 9-3. Cubs lost a pitcher's duel in Cleveland, 3-2 was the final in that one. Diamondbacks blew out the Marlins, 11-3. NBA basketball, the Bulls lost to the Nets, 115-107, so the Bulls are now three games out of the final play-in playoff spot with three games to play. So they obviously have to win out, and they need the Wizards, to lose out. Otherwise, the Bulls will be eliminated from playoff contention. Suns lost to the Warriors last night, 122-116. Chief.
So when you, every morning now, you're talking more and more about the Borman, right?
Yeah.
Now, do you think that the increased issues on the Borman might have anything to do with the huge increase in tolls on the Skyway this year?
I think it absolutely has something to do with that.
You know what a toll is for an 18-wheeler on the Skyway?
$10?
$40.80.
Whoa. That's like New York City.
And now, of course, the minute you get done with that, you got to pay for at least a piece of the Indiana toll road. So that, what are those toll booths are, what, a mile apart? 2 miles apart? So I'm going to say it's probably $55-$60 to not take the Borman and to take the Skyway. So you wonder why the traffic is increasing on the Borman. Duh. Right? Duh. Just saying. By the way,
and the thing is that you might still choose to take the toll bridge and followed by the tollway because of time and the limitations on the amount of hours truckers can drive and so on. But then if you have congestion at the circle because traffic is going on forever there, you're eating up that time too. So you know it's all a complete disincentive to follow the route of least resistance.
Just so we talk a little bit more on this gas shortage, but I want to ask Kevin about a little bit about the government's role or non-role in this. But there is evidently there is a I won't say serious, but there's becoming a gas shortage in Florida. Now you might ask, hey Batman, why exactly sir? It's nowhere near the Colonial Pipeline. So we have talked this week, and I'm sure people have like, what the hell is this chief guy talking about? You look at the inventories, and again,
I do that all the time, Tom.
Yeah, I know. Well, Kevin is our expert on supply chain stuff, and since I was around and actually looking at this stuff in college when we had the Arab oil embargo and so forth, I'm sure nothing has changed in terms of people. When you look at your inventories of gasoline, I'll be brief with this because I mentioned earlier in the week, look at your inventories of gasoline, you ask yourself, self, where is most gasoline in this country inventoried? And the answer is in your car. And if you look at how many million cars we have in this country, 200 million or some incredible number, virtually all of them, if you did an average, I think an equilibrium or what, Kevin, 46, 48% full in the tank. Most, I mean, if you, there's people that always want it full, there's people that always, if they have more than a gallon in there, they think they're wasting money. But bottom line,
Somewhere around half.
Somewhere around half. And if all of a sudden everybody said, oh man, there's going to be a shortage, I better go top off, we could create a shortage. What are we today? Wednesday? We could easily have a shortage in Illinois by Friday. Easily. Because every gas station does not have the inventory to fill up half a tank for every car in the state. Absolutely does not have it. It's not an inventory. It's not on the way here. It's not in a truck. It's not in the pipeline. It just isn't. And why would it be? Right? Because you never, well, Florida,
right.
Evidently.
And so the problem, so when you do that, when there's a run, everybody says, I must get gas.
Yep.
What they're really saying is, I'm going to go over and deplete what's in the tank at the station, who isn't going to get their next delivery until tomorrow.
Right. So in Florida, they actually they've totally manufactured, they must be listening to Stocks and Jocks, they've totally manufactured their own shortage. Which isn't to say...
Well, they did, except then the next day, when they were going to hit the wall anyway, because the next shipment isn't arriving either. And when they get the daily fill-up at the station, it's going to bite them at some point anyway, because the next delivery is not going to come, because it's at the depot and there's nothing being delivered to the depot.
Well, Florida's totally out of this Colonial Pipeline loop. They got their own pipeline, I mean, which isn't to say that there isn't one or two.
Well, yes and no, because the pipeline has all kinds of spurs along
right.
the way. And so if you were to pull up a pipeline map, you'll see this, that there are all, so the pipeline kind of runs a not quite a semicircle type of arc, but a little bit of an arc across the southeastern United States. But then off of it, there are all these long spurs that hit all the major cities in the southeast. So to the extent that stuff gets pipelined to Florida directly, that's one part of it. But to the extent that they get deliveries out of someplace like Atlanta to parts of Florida, then they're going to have that. They're going to have that problem, and so now what happens is, if that's what hits the northern part of the state, then people are going to start diverting some of the gas that hits the southern part of the state to the northern part of the state to balance out the load.
Well, there's no doubt,
and
Kevin,
that's what we're seeing all throughout the country, and that's why I say if there's this bullwhip effect where everything just starts to adjust and has to adjust, and then it has to adjust back, and it's not easy.
Well, I mean, if say you had an enterprising dude, say like Thomas, a former producer, and he fills up his tank with his tanker with gasoline in northern Florida, and he says, I can go deliver this to Matty Weber in Tampa at $3 a gallon, or $2 a gallon, or the bleep is paying $3 in New Jersey. Let's see. It's how many miles in New Jersey, how much diesel does it take for me to get there? It's easy enough to do the math, right? So
for the supplier, it just is a math exercise. That's exactly what it is. Now, you may have some relationship issues. You may have some volume commitments and things like that, contractually, that you have to meet. And so you're not going
right.
to make, you're not going to shift everything, but... yes, it is essentially, do the math and dispatch your truck. One of the other adjustments that we made, that the Biden administration made, was that you now the drivers can have an extra 4 hours a day on the road, so that they can start, you know, create basically more trucking capacity to get things there, and that's a temporary order. Now, I'm not sure how I feel about people driving an extra 4 hours and getting tired with a tanker full of gasoline.
14 hours behind the wheel with a tanker,
I suppose.
14 hours behind the wheel of a tanker. I'm going to say I know exactly how I feel.
Yeah, so is there going to be, you know, is there going to be some kind of crash? Now, you know, when we talk about the, you know, the hours, you know, there's a certain amount of delivery time. There's time when you're working and time when you're driving. And when you're driving, you're working, but when you're working, you're not necessarily driving. It depends, you know, there's loads and unloads and all kinds of things like that that come into play, but still, we are going to be talking about some tired drivers on the road, and they're driving highly combustible products.
What do they call that? White line fever? Wasn't that the name of the movie? White line fever. Remember? I don't think you ever saw that one, Maddie. That's what they when a trucker's on the road too long, and all of a sudden he starts weaving across the line in the middle. It's called white line fever when you're just over the top. Just
that makes sense.
My question regarding
this.
There's
even a country song about it.
Hey, one of our listeners, I forget who it was, sent me a thing yesterday regarding these ransomware attacks. And as you know, Kevin,
I was going to get us to shift over there too. So
I think as much as I try and hide it, to some extent. My umbrage with what is an excuse for the law enforcement community right now when it comes to things like this, and I'm not talking about the policemen on the street. I mean, I have utmost respect for most of them. But the idea that an amazing amount of the shift in law enforcement has been pushed onto essentially other people, like, banks are now in charge of anti-money laundering. When did the bank get that job? I mean, PTI Securities is in charge of anti-money.
1980s.
PTI Securities is in charge of doing anti-money laundering investigations on people. You know, when exactly did I start getting paid for doing that? I mean, come on. I mean, and if
you don't get paid, but you get stuck with it.
Well, God help you if you do it wrong.
It's all part of the war on drugs.
But they keep pushing. I think that's all such BS, Kevin. It has nothing to do with the war on drugs. It has to do with these guys don't want to do it. So I'm going to say that for years now, and please kick me.
Let me put it this way, Tom. It probably did have a lot to do with the war on drugs, and somebody thought it was a good idea. But lo, these many years later, has it stopped the flow of drugs?
No. Well, I mean,
we're still doing it.
Yeah, but I'm not naive enough to think that you if you're going to do anything in terms of law enforcement, having your citizenry open their eyes a little bit helps you out a lot. Okay, to encourage that a little bit, I guess. I mean, obviously, your bank is your first line of defense. If somebody every day comes piling in and doesn't have a cash business. And all of a sudden, there's big bags of $100 bills being exchanged at your teller every single day. They're going to know that quicker than the FBI is going to. I mean, I get part of this, but I'm going to guarantee you, and I use that term because I know what happens if somebody breaks into Maddie's house, and he foolishly has his computer sitting there with his password of, whatever.
Password, which
US
is,
Bank.
Just happens to be password.
Yeah, well, you know, he's at US Bank, and all of a sudden somebody, and he's in his statements right there, so somebody hacks in and manages to wire 10 grand out of Maddie's account to their own account. Well, I know this is a crime. For God's sake, I'm a son of a Southside cop. I know this is a crime. It's not call the FBI or call the police for the breaking and entering and stuff. What are you calling me for? Call the bank. They should have had procedures in place to stop this. And by the way, have the bank pay him. And why are you even calling me? That's not what I do. I chase old ladies who had their purses stolen or some crap. I mean, they've defined their job in such a way. Well, I'm going to say that there's, somebody sent me a thing, there were 30,000 ransomware things in the last five, and whatever, I don't know if this is right or not, one of our listeners. I'm going to say in every single one of those cases, they said, well, hey, it's your crappy system, pay the guy if you want to get back up, what are you calling me for? And I'm going to say, Kevin, that every single time, that's at least a felony, it gets worse the more you put up with it, and now we got this big fat one, and even then, it's reaching a point where this is an act of war, for God's sake. I mean, this is beyond the IT people at the Colonial Pipeline. I'm sorry. You can't just say, hey, maybe you should pay these guys and quit calling me. I mean, we're way down this road and we shouldn't be. I tell you what, please don't ever put me anywhere near the Oval Office. I would go to a meeting of these people in the FBI and I'd be like, what's his name? Wilford Brimley in, Absence of Malice. I got a bunch of, resignations in my briefcase that I'm leaving with a bunch of asses in it. I mean, why would we continue to pay these guys when they say, well, why is that our problem? I mean, because it's, how is the Colonial Pipeline IT people supposed to, defend themselves over a serious group from Russia that's been practicing for 5 years without anybody coming down on them? I mean, I'm done ranting, but am I just seeing this as a dumb old citizen or what?
First of all, you hire Matt.
Well, that's true, yeah. Well, yeah.
That's right. Now we're talking.
Yeah.
Now we're on track here. So that's one of the first things you do. Hey, look, how are they supposed to do it? Right now, I've been responsible for cybersecurity. I know what it's like, and I know what it's like to get breached. And it's hell. One of the problems that you always have is that you're always playing catch up to the bad guys. I mean, that there's no doubt about it. But in this case, before I have any judgment about any of it, I want to know what happened. And it's a privately held company, so I don't know that we're going to ever know what happened. I don't know what kind of a disclosure we should expect out of this. There's a lot of ways that this happens, and it just sort of depends. So, you know, one of the ways is you have bad guys out there, and they are nonstop trying to penetrate your defenses. And, you know, you're out there, you're going after IP addresses, you're going after server names, you're doing port scans, and every time you see one that doesn't look, you know, or you notice an operating system, you're trying all the known exploits against it, and you're doing it all at computer speed, so it's not like it takes forever to do this. I used to look at daily intrusion attempts, and a lightweight day would be 80 or 90 of them, and a heavyweight day would be tens of thousands of intrusion attempts. So, you know, that's going on. But that's not the biggest vulnerability that you have. You know, you can keep everything up to date, keep everything patched, have all your security, you know, have good practices, good firewall definitions, everything that you want in there. You still are subject to your individual employees, and that's how most breaches happen. It really gets down to your employees. Somebody is going to click a link that's going to bring you a payload, or they're going to open an attachment that they don't really know when they really don't know what it is or who sent it, and it's going to have executable code. And the problem is that in many of these cases, the minute that the breach happens is not when it manifests itself. So the first thing you want to do if you're one of the bad guys is you get into the network and you want to start go exploring the network. You don't want to do anything other than find out what is where. Where's the data? Where's the main databases? What are the server names? You know, all of these things that are in there. And if you can find your way into, if it's a, assuming it's a Microsoft network, and most are, you find your way into Active Directory. If you're able to compromise the Active Directory database, you can set yourself up as a network administrator and just have the run of the place. And all of this goes on in the background where, you know, once they're in, it's really, really hard for anybody to see it happen, because the worst case is it's going to make one of the computers run a little slower, but it's not going to be obvious that anything's happening. Then once the lay of the land is completely established, and this could be weeks later, now you have, okay, we're going to encrypt the data and hold it for ransom, and this is how we're going to do it. So a lot of this gets back to training people. Now, I'll tell you one more thing, is you can do a lot to prevent that automatically. You do a lot of training so that people are very aware and don't tend to open things they shouldn't. And you can do a lot to harden your network. My nightmare scenario always involved people taking their laptops off of the network and going home and getting compromised on a home network, or traveling and getting compromised on a hotel network. And then you bring it back, you put the computer on the docking station, or you connect via VPN, and now the compromised computer is attached to the network, and now I'm screwed. And it's always, you know, the what do people bring, you know, how easy is it to fool your people, and what can they bring from outside and put on and cause to happen on your network? And that's where the vulnerabilities are. And I am, you know, I'll give you odds, you know, that's going to be the source of this, is it's going to be an individual activity and not something that you know, that was just a brute force intrusion.
Well, that's why I think, Kevin, one of the reasons I really do, we got Dash here in a minute, I enjoy doing this show.
Oh, and by the way, when I say bring it from home or connect to the VPN, where's everybody working nowadays?
Yeah, yeah.
Home.
Well,
do you think the home networks are nearly as hardened as the Colonial Pipeline's network, you know, their own network?
If
there's a compromise, it's, you know, a worker from, that's why we're seeing so many more of these lately, is because it's much easier to compromise someone working home.
But I also, there's several levels of the chessboard here, and my level, maybe I'm just pissed off at people today, I don't know, but my level would be, I'm going to interview my guy, whoever he is, head of the FBI or whoever in charge of this stuff, and I'll say, okay, I got this note here on my desk that says that there's, you know, 30,000 of these in the last year. How many arrests have we made? Well, we haven't made any. Okay. When somebody gets a ransomware, what do we do? Well, we don't normally do anything. It's usually up to them. All right, so there's probably groups of however many people that are attacking people and the people that they're attacking, they probably, since they're getting money every single day, they're probably overwhelming these people's apartment. Well, yeah. And I say, what exactly is it are we doing to help these people? Well, we've decided that that's not what we're supposed to be doing. And then that's when I say, who's we? Do you got a mouse in your pocket? I didn't tell you not to go after these people. Who the hell's your boss? Well, you are. Well, then who the hell? I decided that we're not going to do anything. So, well, then what do you do all day? I mean, this is the conversation. It's the same conversation I have to have with the Ronald Reagan Trust Department that didn't do an antitrust case in 8 years. I have to ask, what do you do all day? do you get your check? Yeah. What do you do? I mean, is it a fair question? I think it is.
Yeah. Hey, one more thing real quickly. One of the things that, you know, the companies can do to fight back is just make sure that you have good backups and that you can easily put everything back together so that you can give your ransomer the cyber finger and say, I'm not paying, I'm just going to blow away my network and get it back online. If these people are down a week anyway, just trying to keep order, they could probably, if they had the proper DR plan in the first place, they could probably, and maybe this is what they're doing, just blow away the network completely, and you're not starting from scratch. You don't have to reimagine it. You have it backed up. You have it backed up in a place where somebody can't touch that file, and so you just knock everything down, and you put it back together, and you're up and running, and you haven't paid a ransom, and that discourages it. That means, you know, it was a wasted effort on behalf of the ransom.
Kevin, we have a real quick... I think people have noted, have done business with us. We have RBC side, it's one of our clearing firms, Royal Bank of Canada. And then we also have people that can go through the IB side, which is the really high-tech electronic stuff for guys who want to do futures and the quick twitch stuff. So we have two places for our people to go. If you somehow mess up your IB side, and this is what I think you're sort of talking about, which of course I've managed to do a couple of times, you can go in there and say, just bring me everything back to, where are we, Wednesday. Bring me back to Monday's date. And everything that happened between...
Right, and you can do that. That, in many cases, that's an unacceptable recovery point. because people say I can't lose that much data. I can't back it out. That's too costly as well. But you can do things, you know, you can set yourself up so that if you're logging and mirroring your logs so that you're pushing some of your log data offline, then you can reapply all those transactions once you get back to your recovery point.
Okay.
This is all doable. You just, it takes a lot of work to get there and a lot of planning, and then you have to test it because when you throw some scale at any plan, you're going to find some bumps in it. And so you have to go through a process of testing it. This is what cybersecurity people do. And it's really, you know, it's important work. If you're that reliant on the IT infrastructure, then you damn well better have, you better be doing that part of the work. And unfortunately, most companies don't start doing that until they've already taken the first hit. It's just like the person who doesn't back up his files regularly until he loses his files, and then all of a sudden he zealously backs up the files.
Or it could be me. I don't have any files.
This is what happens.
All right, Ken, we'll talk to you on Friday, bud. SP Futures down 12, NASDAQ Futures down 67. Be right back, Mr. Russell Rhodes.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Something happening here.
Hello, North Bay Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tamayo. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures up, I'm sorry, down 13. NASDAQ Futures down 71. We've been down the last 3 days, so the up is maybe a hopeful sign. Today would be the morning of the third day, so if we want to bounce, we did bounce pretty severely in the in NASDAQ yesterday. We were down well over 200 and finished down only a little bit, but the Dow did not. Dow was down 470, so the Dow made up for not being much down the day before, and the NASDAQ got clobbered. Russell, the stuff is all over the place. This crap is moving, as they used to say on the trading floor.
You know, I will tell you, how long have I been on here? 42, 43 years?
Yeah.
Yeah, something like that. If you, the second that I say a word on here, if you buy the S&P futures and then you sell them as we sign off, you would have made a small fortune.
You think it's because of you?
No, not at all, but...
You think it's a Wednesday phenomenon?
I just think it's just the way it is. All you got to do is buy the dips.
Buy the dips. The only problem is every...
It has nothing to do with me. Hey, the logistics thing or the internet thing that you guys were talking about in the previous hour, I'm not trying to get overly political here, but, and I don't know the answer to this question, but I do know that probably, gosh, 6-7 years ago, didn't we, like, cede control of the internet? We used to have, the United States used to control it, and we kind of opened it up to the whole world.
You know, I don't know.
No, there's something that was done during the Obama administration.
Oh, that was the open architecture versus the... It had to do with streaming stuff and whether or not...
No, it was... I was trying to find articles about it real quick, but the remain of the control over the internet passed to a California nonprofit from, I think, a part of the Department of Commerce.
Well, let me take your
My point is, I think we opened it up, which probably at the time seemed like the right thing to do, but I wonder if, because it truly is, you know, a wide open thing that is not controlled by really any entity anymore, if that just makes it easier for bad guys to screw around with it.
Well, let me take it even further, what you're saying. I'm just going to shock you. I've mentioned this before, but I was actually, when I was on the board at the SIBO, I was the board member who, when they said they asked for volunteers and I didn't step back fast enough, I ended up being the board member on the double, might even been triple secret, internet like hacking committee. Mm-hmm. So once a month I would go to a meeting with four or five people who really knew what they were talking about, and then there was me. To say that I was a fish out of water was an understatement. And this, we're talking 1998, 97.
Uh-huh.
And we were getting, the CBOE, we were getting attempts at hacks, I'm going to say, Matty, does this sound right? You know more about this than me. Four or five times a week were real attempts, and to the point where, as you recall, and we started giving quotes out on the CBOE website. We did not give the quotes out directly. We bought the quotes from a third-party vendor because we didn't want anybody being able to hack from those quotes up into the mainframe. So we paid for outside quotes for our own quotes. So we sold them to somebody that bought them back from them. I mean, just because we didn't want it. But it stunned me at the time, and I still am in a total quandary. In those days, it wasn't, you know, guys from Russia. A lot of the people were from Finland. Because Finland had, you know, one TV station, and it was dark, 20 hours a day in the wintertime. So they had guys over there in Sweden. That's all they did was hack stuff. And they didn't care what you were or what you did. They basically would show up at Russell or Matt Weber's home machine, and they'd try and work their way up the machine. And if they were blocked, they'd go somewhere else. If they weren't blocked, they'd just keep running up until they find and once in a while, they probably hit pay dirt or something. I don't know, or whatever they were looking for. There were people that sold stuff at the time that you could actually, if they were hacking you, you could hack back at them. But my question was, at that time, how the hell did somebody in a rural area in Finland with maybe a dial-up through AOL or a Finnish equivalent of AOL, how the hell did they make it from there and have enough bandwidth, I knew what the term meant at the time, enough bandwidth to try and cause trouble in a SIBO mainframe? What kind of computer do they even have back in those days? I mean, and what kind of a line? How could you even have the power or the over a phone line to even cause any problem halfway around the world? This is when the internet first started. So I don't know if there ever was anybody who said you couldn't go from here to there because you're a bad guy or a girl or something. I mean, I don't know how the thing was ever designed.
That's kind of where I'm going is there's I'm trying to come up with the percentage. There's about 20% of the world right now that lives with an internet that I'll bet you can't do a ransomware attack on. And that's our buddies over on China. Trust me, I have been in China, and when you are on the internet, you know when you use a virtual private network where you tunnel in to where you work and things work kind of slow and they seem to be moving in slow motion. It was obvious to me that somebody was watching everything that I did when I was on the internet over there.
But just because,
or it was being read by some sort of system.
But just because
it was just moving sluggishly. I actually wrote notes to him. I said, "Hi, how are you today?"
Well, then, I guess my question would be, and I have no way of answering it, just because they're nosy enough to know if or care whether you went to a porn site, doesn't mean that they're helping that business not get hacked business-wise.
Well, I think if they have the ability to sit there and watch what people are doing on the internet, it makes it a lot more difficult for the bad guys to do things. And beyond that, and I don't, you know, I'm not doing anything on the internet that I care that they see me doing. You know, and I know that people say that's a, I think if Kevin were on here, he'd say, well, that's the way that they sneak in. You know, you're a little lackadaisical about one thing, and next thing you know, they're controlling everything you do. But, I mean, maybe we need to have a little bit more control over the internet.
Well, I mean, Kevin was just saying, though, is it's not...
Somehow try to control things coming in from outside of the United States into our internal system, or have a side-by-side system that's a little bit more secure and kind of a hybrid between being private and completely public.
Well, if people were to sell systems in 1998 to do damage to people that did damage to you, basically hack back at them, you can't tell me. I mean, I guess you could. People know way more than me, but you can't tell me that if we actually got off our dead ass on the law enforcement side and found some firm someplace that was hacking into the SIBO, the PTI, and ransomware. They hacking into everybody that did like five or six places last year. You can't tell me that we aren't good enough to find a way to screw those people somehow, either hacking back at them or doing something. I mean, if we wanted to, we could make it much more. I'm not going to say we'll get 100%. But if we all of a sudden somebody walked in and hit his keyboard and his arm lit up in an electrical fire, he'd get the message. If you know what I'm saying? I mean, but the idea we just let it happen and say it's the firm's responsibility. I mean, come on. At some level, I mean, what if it's the Pentagon, which they just did, by the way? How does that have a bomb not dropped on their head? I mean, or am I getting over the top here? I mean, it's duh.
No, I think it's the equivalent. I think it's totally equivalent, but we don't have any sort of defenses in place, and that's not true of other countries.
Right, but I wouldn't necessarily equate Chinese wanting to know exactly what you're doing on the internet with them caring about
the extreme to the other side.
Yeah,
but just the fact that they have that ability means that, and my assumption is they're using that ability to make sure they can control, you know, the 1.3 billion people or whatever that live there, and control what they see, et cetera, and make sure they're not on Twitter and stuff like that. And there's ways for people over there to get around that stuff. I know that for a fact too, because I have former students that live over there, and I'll hear from them every once in a while, but I never ask them provocative questions. I don't want to get them in any trouble.
Well, how do you think that the?
But really, where I'm going with this is, in order to make sure that all of these goofy things that really can have a huge negative impact on our lives. You were talking about Florida. I've got a lot of friends in Nashville that moved from Memphis to Nashville at some point where I grew up, and there ain't no gas at a lot of places. It's not just Florida.
I'm going to say
there's a bigger problem than I think a lot of people realize.
All right, I'm going to say that there is a real lot of gas, and that 70% of the population now has a full tank instead of half, and the other people are
still. Oh, yeah.
We've created our own shortage. But you know that, what, I don't know, you listened to the one day, or actually it was 2 days, that Jeff, when they wrote their luck box thing regarding China, the thing that you just mentioned, is that the Chinese government, according to Jeff, is actually keeping track of the people that are here, that they're essentially. Now my question is, how the hell are they seeing what they do here? That makes me real nervous.
Well, that's because we have a wide open internet and they don't.
But it doesn't mean that we shouldn't be able to, if Jeff can figure it out. Well, Jeff's a smart guy. But he actually went out and they did a lot of legwork. If Jeff can do 10 interviews, and by the way, I'm not minimizing what his guys did. I mean, they went out and did a lot of legwork and did a lot of asked a lot of the right questions. I guess what I'm saying is, if this is my, I don't know why this is my theme this morning, but if Jeff can figure that out relatively quickly, I mean, as bright as Jeff is, I don't understand how we are paying people all over our the government that they don't seem to know what Jeff knows. How can that be? I mean, why don't we just fire all these people? If they're what are we paying them for?
I think they're more concerned with our military systems, our government systems, those sorts of things.
But are they getting to decide what they do?
We're not really set up to have the government completely intertwined with industry like other economies, and maybe we should.
Well, but anybody who doesn't take this pipeline episode, the Pentagon episode of how many months ago was that, 4 or 5, and we've had a few others that maybe we don't even know about. Anybody who doesn't, even if you're Joe Biden reading the newspaper, I mean, in the Oval Office, at some point you got to go, hey, wait a minute, get a few of these guys in here. I want to know what the hell is going on and what we're doing about it. And the answer might be nothing. And why is that? We've got how many million people work for the place? Don't we have 10 guys on this project? If not, where are we going to find them? I mean, why not? It's all a question of, I mean, what do these people, you know, what do they do all day? I mean, right? I don't.
Well, and I know how bad I'm going to sound when I say this, but our best and brightest don't go into government.
Okay.
And don't go into, you know, if you're really good at, you know, or you have the natural skills involved in being a hacker or being involved in repelling hacking, you're probably doing one of two things and making a lot of money. You're either working on video games, the next popular video game, or you are you're coding ways to make money in our market or in our industry.
Okay.
You're not working for the government. Whereas if you have those skills and you're in Israel, when you do your 2 years of military, you actually are doing nothing but cyber stuff. So their smartest cyber people are working for the government.
Russell, we're not above paying.
Smartest ones aren't working for the Chinese government as well.
We're not above paying people an awful lot of money to do contract work for the government. I mean, this guy from
this guy from
Palantir, which actually did a real nice earnings spread in there the other day. Thank you very much. The guy took $1.1 billion last year in salary or with nothing but government contracts. So, I mean, it's not like there's not any money being thrown around here. Is it being spent wisely? Is it being spent doing the right stuff? Or is it just being spent for guys that take $1 billion out in 1 year?
No, it's not. It's not being spent in the right. It's being spent to protect the government. It's not being, you know, it's not being spent to protect industry or critical infrastructure in industry, and it probably should be.
Well, yeah, Russell, when you come out, I always try and because you're the one guy, since you are the professor, that I can bounce this sounding board from, is always the difference between, or the interrelations between social mores and the economy. And we saw, and lately, I mean, Kevin and I have been talking about it, and really everybody, is the supply chain kind of breaks down, as other stuff seemingly is breaking down, as you allegedly can't hire people, as people somehow think they can hire people for the same price they did a year ago, and the inflation has to be God knows what different from a year ago. I mean, it seems like everybody's kind of in a fog a little bit, it seems to me. I mean, and just about everything. I mean, I mean, what is the backlash going to be when the Fed decides they're going to pump up asset prices by pouring money into the system? By the way, I have a specific question I need to ask you regarding monetization of debt. When they start to do that, and they understand, they should understand. I mean, I listened to the guy from St. Louis yesterday, and it's hard. I mean, I'm not that good on TV either. Some would say I'm not very good on radio, but how do we hire this guy? I mean, he sounds like he's in. He reminds me of Silas Keene, for God's sake. He used to be the Chicago board president. mean, you listen to him and you go, what planet are they coming from? He actually introduced yesterday, I know I'm off subject again, that even if inflation were to get really hot, we have to decide that most of it is just going to be transitory and we're not worried about that. We're trying to find the 2%. We're still working on getting the people to expect the 2%. He basically said, even if it's 10%, we're going to say that 8% of it is, 8.5% of it is transitory or temporary, and we're still not there yet on the 2% that's permanent. I'm listening to this going, what is he talking about? That he's going to be able to split the two down the middle? Like I'm supposed to, if everything that I buy is up 10% and my salary is up 2%, I'm supposed to be okay because the other 8 is temporary? What planet is he on, I guess, what I want to say, Russell? I mean, what is he talking about?
There's no logic behind what you just said.
And, I mean, that's exactly what the dude said.
There's just absolutely, you know, there's no logic at all behind that.
But I guess when you and I talk every week, and usually one of us says something like, well, if you do this, this happens. So you're my man when it comes to no man can do one thing. What is going to hit? Even the guys were ragging about it on CNBC. Let's just say, in my opinion, and I don't know if you can agree or not, the Fed pumped the hell out of the market in the last 12 months. And because of what I consider to be a board system that's totally off the rails, some companies I think it still works fine, but a lot of it doesn't. The incredible executive bonuses that these increases in stock prices, especially in companies that don't even make any money, have wrought for these guys. You know, $20 million, $200 million bonuses. The guy at Palantir, $1.1 billion. If all these stocks drop back down, I'm not saying they are or would or I want them to, if they all drop back down to a year from now, and all these guys got all this dough, are people going to be, I mean, I'm going to say, are they going to be grabbing the tomatoes and start winging them at these guys? I mean, what kind of a social screw-up is that if that happens?
I think last summer will pale in comparison to the social screw-up or the repercussions that you'll see around that.
I mean, because it's just starting to percolate a little bit. And
it is. And it's, you know, and the thing is, you're seeing, I'm seeing people, you know, that I consider kind of like my peers starting to actually be impacted by having to go to three places before they can find gasoline down in Tennessee right now.
Wow.
Yeah, and that sounds like a minor irritant, but those are the kind of things when you put on top of, I've been locked up in my house for a year and I'm about to lose my mind. You know, all those things, as you say, percolate. Those things do not end particularly well.
No,
you know, when Clinton ran against Bush and it, you know, Clinton said it's the economy, stupid. What he was really saying was it's people's day-to-day lives that they can, you know, that are being impacted negatively, maybe by what the government's doing or what the state of the world or whatever. And then everybody starts looking for a scapegoat, and they lash out toward that scapegoat. It may end up being our government, and that can be a pretty nasty situation.
Well, it's starting to. I hear it. Like I say, you know that I still dabble around, and I say I try and match up people that I know can do some construction work with people that need it, because there's a lot of older people that have not had the money to fix up their homes, and finally they get some, and I try and. Once in a while, I know some people that do the work. And anyway, but enough of it. I'm not in the construction business. But I've had a couple of those guys call me and say, man, I gave this guy an estimate like a year ago. And they said, oh, I'm ready for my bathroom to be remodeled. And I said, sure, you know, let's do it. And all of a sudden, I'm paying, I scoped the job out at $250 a 2x4, and I'm paying $8.
Yeah.
And I didn't adjust the price. Basically lost money. And I've got a neighbor
that was going to get a wood fence about a year ago, and I think they jacked the price, and we're talking about a small one, like 6 feet, and they they increased the price of it by $300 on it.
Yeah,
year over year.
Well, I mean, you look at
what do you mean?
Have you seen
and it's somebody in our industry actually, so they knew that the lumber prices been going up.
Have you checked, I know you do some trading on the, you checked the prices, and I don't have anybody in it, and I figured if I still had the dexterity to kick myself in the ass, I would. Why am I not in these steel companies? Do you see this Nucor and you, what are these guys?
The steel companies,
yeah.
The copper companies, and yeah, it's, they have definitely, they've already reacted to, or adjusted for some sort of inflation coming. And in fact, if we don't get the inflation in the next few months, those stocks are probably going to reverse on you.
Well, I'm looking at
honest to God, what I'm saying is, I honest to God, and we don't give advice here, but I think it's too late for the inflation trade unless you think we're going to get some headline grabbing hyperinflation.
Well, I'm looking at this Nucor. For those of you that don't know, and again, this is not a, I don't own it. I don't have it. I unfortunately don't own it and don't have it for any of my people. I do have some FCX, which we've done real well on. But yeah. So I'm a open book here. We've finally done pretty decently on the gold and the silver, but nothing compared to if I was in FCX the whole way. I mean, not even close. I mean, we've got the GDX going from, 28 to 37. His Freeport has gone from like 5 to 45. I mean, it's not even what I'd rather.
That's copper.
Yeah. But I'm looking at this Nucor and NUE. Now, the thing that sets these guys apart, not that I know a whole lot about the steel industry, except as usual, I know some people. If you use the yearly chart, well, I won't even do the yearly chart. I'll do the 1 month. All right, I'll do the 1 month. God's sake, the thing was $75 in April, and now it's $105. There hasn't been a down day. The whole graph is green. the graph. What do you get? The little step functions where the down day is red and the other ones are green. The whole everything since April is green. I don't think I've ever seen that before.
Bitcoin.
Okay. But I'm saying, now the things that make these guys unique is that they have they're not open hearth. They're the guys that have actually revolutionized the industry. So they can take scrap steel and make, steel that you can use girders on highways from. So that's where they went, and that's why they've kind of outstripped the rest of the industry. But again, it's not a commercial for them, but God's sake, the thing is damn near doubled. I mean, what are we talking about? Are these steel prices going to triple, quadruple? Is the infrastructure, the government's going to pay any price? I mean, I can't even imagine where these prices are going to take the stock price to these numbers, Russell. I mean, do you? I mean,
that's actually, in a roundabout way, you said what I was saying is that, these stocks that you would consider the inflation trade, they are priced for perfection on much higher inflation in 2021.
Yeah, I mean, we're not talking about whatever steel counts about a pound. What's it going to be? Double, triple? It's got to be for these prices.
And I have a little note in my notebook because.
Russell, sorry, CPI year over year.
I know you got to break.
No.
CPI. Stick with this.
CPI year over year up 4.2%. Spoos are now down 40. They just dropped 30 points on the Spoos. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. It's Grant Weber on the board. The CPI number is even worse than I thought. The headline number is 0.8%. So if you multiply that by 12, you get 9.6, right? X food and energy, it's up 0.9, so which tells you that the increase in gas prices aren't even really in this number, because it probably came from 2 weeks ago, which makes it even worse again. S&P futures down 33, NASDAQ futures down 175. And this is what's interesting. The TLT, which is your bond ETF, is actually up, and your 10-year rate is, 10-year rate's up, but the bond ETF is up, so, at the 10-year rate is 1.64 now. But I mean, in reality, if the inflation is going to be that high, nobody is going to lend anybody any money for 10 years at 1.64. So the Fed is reaching the flip point here. We'll talk about it with Russell, to where if they start pouring more money in, all it's going to do is make the inflation worse, which is actually going to be the opposite effect they're going to have on interest rates. So they're behind the eight ball right now, I think. Anyway, that's just one man's opinion. Over in Europe, again, a little bit delayed here. I still have the DAX up 61. I bet they're not up 61, because this CPI number just came out. 0.4%, FTSE up 46.7, CAC around up 1. Now the Japanese and the Asian markets, those obviously haven't moved. Nikkei's down 461, 1.6. Shanghai up 20.6. Hang Seng up 217.7. Taiwan dropped 4%. Nissan shares are down 10%. So individual pockets over in Asia are getting hammered. Again, as a review of yesterday, Dow was down 473, S&P down 36, NASDAQ down 12. So today, if it happens again, it'll be 3 days in a row, somewhat carnage. 10-year, 1.64, like I mentioned. The Bund, minus 0.15, you'd think they'd be at zero one of these days, the way things are going with this money. Japan, positive 0.08, UK, positive 0.83. Oil, up 84 cents, 66.12. Brent up 80 cents, 69.35. Natural gas up 2 cents, 2.97. RBOB up a penny at 2.15. And I'm going to say that the spread between RBOB and the pump prices is also really high. We'll get Russell's read on that when we come back. Gold down $1.10. I don't see why that is. I bet that turns up today with these numbers. Silver down 17 cents. Copper down a penny. And last, we've got crypto down 390 is the Bitcoin, 56,316. Maddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Not so good on the sports side. Sox good. But
good if you're a Sox fan. Yeah. 37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We're looking pretty good on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. That issue on the Bishop Ford earlier this morning. Outbound side is all clear. We had a crash that was causing some delays, so that's good news. But we have significant delays on both the Stevenson and the Eisenhower on the inbound side as you're heading into downtown, just due to high traffic volume. No accidents to report, but high traffic volume on both I-290 and I-55. So keep that in mind if those are your expressways of note. Edens and Kennedy are looking okay. Lakeshore Drive's quiet in both directions. And as I mentioned, Southside expressways are looking good, especially after that earlier crash on the Bishop Ford is all clear. Off the expressways, we have one crash in the area out in the western suburbs. And that's at Schick Road and South Bloomingdale Road. There is a crash. That's out near Carroll Stream and in that area. But everything else all quiet. Weather today, lots of sunshine again, but cold temperatures, well below normal, but we're used to that. Although it's a bit warmer than it's been the last couple of days at least. We'll be sunny with a high of 56 today. That's about 12 degrees below normal, but again, significantly warmer than it's been the last couple of days. So at least, you know, a silver lining there. Right now it's clear and 48 going up to a sunny high of 56. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 99 today. Right now it's clear and 65. In sports, the White Sox keep rolling. They blew out the Twins last night 9-3. The first place Sox lead MLB in run differential. And guess what? They lead in ERA as well. And if you lead in both of those categories, you're probably going to be a pretty good team. And I think they are. Cubs lost a pitcher's duel in Cleveland, falling 3-2. They'll play the final game of the two-game set this morning, or I should say early afternoon. It's an 11:35 pregame with the first pitch at 12:10 today, Chicago time, so you can flip that on over your lunch hour. Diamondbacks beat the Marlins 11-3, so the Diamondbacks, who really struggled last week, losing six in a row, bounced back with a nice win last night. NBA basketball, Bulls lost to the Nets 115-107. Bulls are three games out of a playoff spot with three to play, so they obviously need to win out, and they need Washington to lose out to force a tie. Suns lost to the Warriors 122-116. Chief.
I know, Matty, you're not giving you a shot here, but in today's world where every stat, I actually read something yesterday where somebody wrote into this Quora thing, who is the better pitcher, Greg Maddux or was it Felix Hernandez? Martinez? One of the, who's the...
Well, there was a Felix Hernandez that was really good for the Mariners for a long time.
I'm talking about the guy...
talking about Pedro?
The starter, was it Martinez or Hernandez?
For what team?
I think it was either Boston.
Oh, Boston. That's Pedro. Pedro Martinez.
Yeah. And they were talking about which was the best one, and they said, well, of course, Maddux had the amount of stats they had on
these guys. They're both first ballot Hall of Famers. So.
Yeah. The amount of stats they had on these guys were pages. Pages of stats.
Baseball's been a stats game for well before you were born.
Right. So my question to you
always has been.
How do 30 teams miss this guy that's on the White Sox? How the hell did he play in the independent league and God knows where else when the guy can hit like there's no tomorrow? He can hit for big power and he can shorten up like the Cubs should learn and he can poke the ball to right field if he needs to. The guy's an absolutely accomplished. He's like a softball player pitcher that can play hardball. I mean, how does that guy toil where nobody notices him for a decade?
I think that, I mean, it's a fair question, but I think, and you know this, baseball is a weird game. It's not like basketball where you draft a guy out of high school and within 1 or 2 years you can tell if he's going to be a superstar or not. It's not like football where your rookie running back can be an all-pro guy. Baseball, people develop in different paces, and it's very rare that a guy is 21 or 22 and is a great player. Usually you're in the minor leagues for 5, 6, 7 years unless you're, you know, an elite, you know, prospect. And sometimes you never make it to the major leagues at all. So I'm not surprised at all that this guy was a late bloomer. And this year it's all clicking, at least during the early going. And he looks like he's, you know, a very, very good player, whereas he was a career minor leaguer before this year.
As much as we do the stat thing here, because we obviously talk about these CPI numbers, man, I used to go when I was a Ute. Well, it wasn't a Ute, it was your age. I'd go watch spring training, and I'd go to the minor league camp. And I'd do my run, and I'd sit there and by myself. And you watch these guys, and there's people taking batting practice. Now, I'm sure there's somebody taking stats. But all of a sudden, a guy up there like you know, Thomas, we always give him grief. Somebody's hitting, and the outfielders are 15 feet in front of the track. And all of a sudden, Somebody else walks up, the guys turn around and they walk back to the track, and they're all on the track, and every time the guy hits the ball, it just sounds different than anybody else hit it. You can't hide. This dude hit a 85-foot home run. You can't tell me that in every team he was ever on, he wasn't losing balls further than anybody else they had.
Well, you're probably right about that, but you also have to factor in he's not exactly a defensive specimen.
Well, and he looks like he's not a center forward.
Right, so you know, teams look at him and they go, okay, where are we going to play this guy? He's basically a DH. He's not fast, and he wasn't hitting breaking balls his entire life until this year. And so it was a combination of, okay, yes, he can lose one if you hang one or you throw a fastball down the middle, but we can't really play him anywhere, and he can't hit a curveball, so.
Well, you're saying he was Serrano.
Right, we don't really have a spot for him. Well, this year, he's been very patient, he's laid off the pitches out of the zone, and he's absolutely crushed the balls in the
zone.
Maybe
he said, hey, bleep you, Joe Boo.
And sometimes it takes guys a while for it to click, right.
I say bleep you, Joe
someone,
Boo.
Someone flew in the, someone brought in the buckets of KFC in the locker room.
But he,
oh my God.
He put one to right field when they needed a runner, hit behind a runner the other day. It looked like something out of the 50s.
He's been just unbelievable to watch and really fun to watch. And with the injuries they've had, he's been a godsend for them. Without Eloy Jimenez and without Luis Robert, two of their best players and, you know, both outfielders and big bats, and they're both out for a long time,
yeah,
possibly for the whole season. This guy coming in and they just haven't missed a beat.
Well, all right, we got to talk about it.
Throw one little thing? I got a question about him first. Did he play last year at all?
He didn't play for the Sox, I don't think.
Where I'm going with this is I actually think that sometimes athletes really benefit from a year off.
I bet he had to have played one of these.
You give your body a little bit. And I know I know if you lay off on golf and then you come back, you're awful, but I think if you get a break from the day-to-day grind, sometimes relative to the people you're playing against.
Well, Russell, let's bring.
Sometimes I think that actually pays off in the long run.
Well, let's tap into our expert, Mr. Weber. The guys who were on the alternative site. So, if you were one of the guys that made it to the Cubs, for instance, if you made it to South Bend, there were how many people there, Matty? And they played what? They scrimmaged each other pretty much every day or some crap.
Right, yeah. Call it, I don't know, 50 guys. I don't know how many it was.
So somewhere 40, 50. And the rest of the minor league system was totally shut down. Right? But now it seems to be surfacing. I've heard guys say that they were in Arizona and they were secretly meeting at, like, Park District fields and playing scrimmage against you. I mean, I don't know that they sat home all day and played tiddlywinks.
I don't think they did nothing, but they didn't. They also didn't have to, get on a plane once a week,
right,
and spend the night in unusual places. I know how travel will wear on you, and they weren't stressed and stuck in more stressful game day type of situations. If they got together and they played nine in a park somewhere, just to keep themselves sharp, when they hit the ninth inning, if they were tied, they went home.
So I pulled up Yermín Mercedes' stats, and in 2020, he had a total of one at-bat.
Wow. Official at-bat somewhere.
Yes, and it was in the big leagues. He had zero at-bats in the minor leagues because they didn't play the minor leagues. He had one at-bat in the big leagues, and he went 0-for-1. 2021, obviously, he's having a monster start to the year. He's batting .381, 5 home runs, 20 RBI. But from 2011 to 2019, he was just in the Washington Nationals, then Baltimore Orioles, and then Chicago White Sox organization from low A ball all the way up to triple A. And 2021 is his first, actual Major League Baseball season at age 28.
Well, the all the stuff that went on at, I'm going to say, South Bend, and where were the Sox? Were they in or somewhere? They're further away. But all the games and the scrimmages and all the stuff those guys did, There's no stats on that, right? It's just gone.
Right, because they weren't official minor league games.
Okay, so the team probably has some.
Yeah, they were just scrimmages. The team was certainly monitoring what guys were doing and trying to progress guys and not have them lose a year entirely. But there was no stats. They weren't playing against other teams. There was no record.
Did they get no paychecks at all?
I don't know. I assume they got something, but they weren't getting their regular checks.
Okay.
I mean, there was no fans. There was no revenue.
Yeah, all right. Russell, all right, we got some time. What are we going to do with the CPI number, bud? We can't dodge it. You're my economist. What are we going to say about it?
Oh, it'll get revised lower next month. Nothing to see here.
What do you think? What do you think the number really is? I'm going to say that the number, my number from last year to this is pushing 10. Because last week I just heard that the two biggest residential rental companies, I hadn't heard either of the names, but both were up 11% last week. Is any new rents up 11%? I mean, these numbers are jumping. I mean, the restaurants are up 10, 11%. Everything, I mean, the omelet's gone from $8 to $12 in like 8 months, seemingly.
It doesn't taste any better.
No. How quick can this happen? I mean, there were, if you go back in a, like I said, I'm doing this spreadsheet. I'll give it to you, Russell, if I ever finish it. There's a couple of months back in the 70s where the federal funds rate went up like 4% or 3%. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like this can't happen real fast. I mean, we hope it doesn't.
No, it does. It generally does happen real fast. But beyond that, I think, do you know Steve Sosnick over at Interactive Brokers?
I heard the name.
Okay, his quote on CPI is classic. He said, "My wife's take on CPI, this is a surprise. Has anybody been to a store recently?"
Yeah. Well, I agree. I guess one question for you is as I listen to our Fed people, they, you know, again, Bullard yesterday, I couldn't even believe what he was saying, but I'll lob one out there, Russell. I'm not going to put a number on it. I'm going to say there's an equilibrium number in terms of money growth vis-a-vis the economy that I'm going to say is somewhat neutral. That if you have a real growth of 3% or 2%, that you can raise your money supply, you know, 1.75 probably to 4, and you're really not going to screw that much with anything, or I'll say 2 to 4. Might do a little bit positive, a little bit negative, but you're in the window, you know. If you want to really affect things to the upside, you probably got to go to 1% or half of 1% or 0, like these guys have been forever. They're giving you the impression that if they totally have overshot the mark for a long period of time, and there's way too much in the system to where we get this 8-10% inflation, which I think we already have, that all they got to do is tweak this up to like 2-2.25, and they can fight that. I'm going to say that the history shows that fighting inflation numbers are more like 12. I mean, what did Volcker get to 15? I mean, the idea of don't worry about it. We'll go from 0.5% to 2.5 if we really have to, and we'll put these horses all back in the barn. God, where are they getting that? I'm saying the fight inflation number is more like 10 or 8 or something like that. I mean, I don't think this whole generation can deal with that. I mean, you'll have to if it happens, but we're not even on the same planet of people expecting that. It's one thing to go in our generation from 6 to 12, but they go from 0 to 12. Ugh, what is that going to do to pricing?
When you say pricing, you mean
asset pricing?
Asset pricing should adjust accordingly to the upside, but in real terms, it's going to slip.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying.
I'm trying to think of a better word than flip for that.
Crash?
I don't know about crash, but drop noticeably.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'm not
very articulate this morning.
Yeah, yeah. we're talking about stuff that almost has no description.
I appreciate that.
But I mean, when you look at Amazon. Stock's trading, it's down this morning, so it's $31.95, down $28. Stock's $3,200. They're what? 80 times, I should know this before I say it, 80, 100 times earnings. They've never paid a dividend and don't plan on ever paying one. So, okay.
Yeah, they're getting ready to do a big buyback.
Okay, but they're going to do a buyback to make these guys even richer. So let me get this
they're
straight.
They're issuing bonds right now to do a buyback.
All right, so if somebody decides a year from now that you can get 8% in the bank, I'm not saying we're going to be there a year from now, but if we were, where does Amazon trade? 300? 400? It's not going to be 3,000.
Right. I taught, I guess, past tense, for Loyola. I would teach a mini MBA program where only 3 hours is spent on finance. So I try to hit on six topics really in depth. And this is to older students than I normally deal with. And the older students were rolling their eyes on Monday night when I started talking about inflation. And when I used and then I used an example where I had a risk-free rate of 3%, and they're like, where, you can't get that anywhere. You never can get that. I'm like, oh my God, you guys are older.
Yeah.
And you don't realize that, you know, that inflation is a possibility. You know, when I say older, probably between 30 and 40.
When you talk about the historic, of course, this is going by the way of the dodo bird, but, The economics guys at the University of Chicago used to say one of the most constant numbers in all of recorded history has been the real rate of interest. It's been between 2.5% and 3% since if I lent you 100 stones in the Stone Age, I wanted you to bring me 103 next year, you know, for lending you the 100. I mean, it's been, and now it's been not that number for what, 15 years?
Yeah, 15 years, but that 2-3% inflation number, I've seen people.
No, that's not inflation. It's a real rate of interest.
Well, but not necessarily inflation, but, you know, how much more things, that is inflation. But my understanding is if you took what the gold price was around Jesus' time and you apply about a 2%, you know, rate to that, you get about where we are right now.
No, what I'm saying is that
the number you just cited goes back a lot longer than 15 years.
It goes
back a couple of millennia.
I'm talking about no inflation whatsoever.
15 years could be a blip.
I'm just saying no inflation whatsoever. I'm buying a building. I want to build a building. I need steel. Well, now you need steel. You need concrete. In those days, God knows what you needed. Steel, I need concrete. I need
a little bit more.
Electrical fixtures. And, oh, by the way, I need some money to build a place because I don't have any. All I've got is the idea. So I'm going to borrow money from you because you have this money. You've been a professor forever and whatever, successful at a bunch of things. You've got the money, but you don't have the idea to build a building. And that's what makes the economy work. But I'm saying that the normal rate, there's a price for everything. The price for cement, there's a price for the price to use somebody else's money in a fairly risk-free manner has been, what, 3% through the centuries. You don't get to use it for free.
I mean, right.
But now all of a sudden, I mean, why should you get to use it for free? You worked hard for it. Why should I get your dough for free? I mean, right? Like banks think that they deserve now, and the government thinks they deserve. And why should I ever use your capital for free? I don't get to steal for free, do I?
No. You use any of that stuff for free.
Right, so why should I get somebody's money for free?
And the cost of the capital, you know, is probably, all of those things are going to go up.
Right.
Back to the first part of the hour, you know, you say it's percolating. What do you think is going to be the tipping point? The tipping point is not going to be the government saying that CPI was up 4.2%. Because that's just a number and that's just a headline. And that's just not real.
I think it might be.
Is it going to be, and this actually happened in the 70s, and it's why we have locks on our gas tanks now.
Yeah.
Is it going to be people siphoning gas out of, you know, the next door neighbor's gas tank?
By the way, I'm way ahead of you on this.
Uh-huh.
When I had the leak in my gas tank, my 42-gallon tank, I thought maybe that the guy who was going to replace the tank for me needed a way to get the gas out of there. So I have a mm-hmm. brand new, very nice siphon hose in a 5-gallon tank. I'm ready.
Oh,
I'm ready. I could sneak.
You
over.
Are ready.
I could sneak over to Maddie's tonight. He'd never know it. He never looks. He thought he had 3/4 of a tank. Now he's got a quarter tank.
That's why I always keep my tank at a quarter or less.
So I don't show up with my siphon hose. So that chief guy doesn't show up with his siphon hose. That sleazeball.
My protection against the gas thieves.
Now, are you going to go fill it up this weekend just to have gas now?
I don't drive that much, so for whatever reason, I just don't really like filling it up. I'll put in, you know, $25 or something like that, and whatever it gets me, and that lasts me like a month or more.
You're not close to filling up the Suburban for $25.
No, I'm not close to even filling up my little car.
No, that's because the wife always drives.
When we drive, which is not very often, we typically do take her car, especially if we're taking the dog.
What, he gets a shed in her car, not yours?
Because she's got the Jeep, and I have leather seats, and she doesn't. And so, yeah, so the dog goes in her car.
So we'll blame it on the dog. I think the tipping point might be these bond rates flying up. The 10-year bond is going to be 3 or 4, and then that's going to hurt the stock prices. I think.
I wonder how many. I wonder if they're even out there anymore. Are there adjustable rate mortgages out there?
No.
Well, people don't do those anymore.
I think they do, but. In fact, so somebody
that's something that would suddenly hit a bunch of people's pocketbooks and would have a ripple effect.
Boy, for a long time, they used to tell people never to get one of those. That was the best investment in the last 10 years, wasn't it? They only went down.
Yeah.
I mean, boy, anyway, Russell, thank you very much, buddy.
You betcha.
We'll talk next week about where you might be these days. SP Futures down 27. NASDAQ Futures down 186. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What do we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.